This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's the Better Up podcast for the 27th of August. Another off day podcast. And it's funny. I don't want to say funny, but we waited all this time for great Atlanta Braves news, and we got some good news on the field yesterday. The sports world, though, across the gamut, is a little bit different, though, as we welcome you in here today. Will Pelagic, Joe Patrick, Caleb Johnson. Hello, Joe Patrick.
I will.
Hello, Caleb Johnson.
What's up?
So while the Braves did play 2 games yesterday, most of the rest of the sporting world outside of the NHL on Wednesday took a pause. And now with games reportedly being postponed and or canceled for Thursday, it kind of leaves the entire sports world in limbo. And even two teams in our area in Atlanta did not play yesterday. The WNBA's Atlanta Dream and Atlanta United and the MLS did not play either. I'll start with you, Joe, just because you were forefront on the Atlanta United scheme and kind of also keeping tabs on what the Braves were doing. A very surreal day yesterday.
Yeah, it really was. And it was hard to tell in real time exactly what was going on, what was going to happen. You know, when obviously this kind of all started, it's pretty amazing to think about the fact that this all started just like pretty much from the Milwaukee Bucks, and which is what, 12 guys in a room making a decision to do something. And everybody got on board in solidarity with them. And I think that they're, you know, obviously clearly making a statement around the sports world right now. But when it was happening, it was kind of like you didn't know whether the game was going to be played or not until kind of the last moment when the ball should have been kicked. So I don't know really how to describe it other than that it was just like a surreal day. I'm proud that the players felt that they were able to express themselves in this way. I think it's a very healthy way to protest. I think that, you know, they're like you see people kind of criticize them for it, you know, like stop, you know, just play the game, do your job, et cetera, et cetera. But that is also a way to, express how you feel about something in a very nonviolent way, which I think everybody wants to see. So that for that reason, I was just very proud of the team. And obviously, we all are looking for the same end goal here. But it was just it was interesting to see how it just unfolded across the sports world.
Caleb, you were on Braves coverage front and center yesterday and kind of dealt with the dichotomy of everything when it comes to what the Braves were doing. Basically, around the time that the NBA games were postponed on Wednesday, Braves were already underway with the first of two against the New York Yankees, and we'll get into the on-the-field stuff in just a moment. But when talking to players afterwards, it did seem like they were kind of use a term that we've heard a lot lately, kind of in a bubble and not really aware of what was going on around them until afterwards, including Freddie Freeman, who, as you detailed with us, Caleb, earlier before we went on the air, seemed like he was moved by something from a personal friend of his and a former Brave.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of the times when it comes to us as white people who are trying to understand the experiences that our friends are going through, it a lot of the times it takes those personal connections to kind of piece it together for you. I know for me yesterday, the first place that I went when I found out that the Milwaukee Bucks were considering not playing, and I went to friends that I've got from college, and we're just kind of like, all right, guys, like, make this make sense for me, because on the initial standpoint, I was kind of like, I'm not entirely sure that I get not playing a game is going to make some sort of impact, but then you see it start just from the Bucks, and it was really George Hill of the Milwaukee Bucks, and it spans out to other leagues are canceling games, and instead we're having conversations instead of talking about goals being scored in a game or points being scored in a game or, you know, all of the minutia of those little details of the game. And once again, like, we'll play some sound from Freddie Freeman, who it took that impact of having a close friend, just knowing that yeah, we've got to stand up and say something.
The Jay Hay Kid currently plays for the Chicago Cubs. Here is Freddie Freeman on learning what happened when it came to Jason sitting down and the kind of situation the Braves were in yesterday with regards to playing versus not playing after their one game had already concluded between the two yesterday.
You know, I saw a picture of Jason Hayward and post on his Instagram. He took himself out of the lineup. I'm not sure if they played, but I heard he took himself out. So, you know, that's one of my best friends. So I'm with what's going around this nation right now. So we didn't have any discussions because we only had 40 minutes to prepare.
I don't know if it's our job to say how you should or shouldn't feel, but I do feel like the number one most underrated personality trait when it comes to us in the world is compassion.
Whew, and preach.
I don't believe that we've seen nearly enough of that from the sporting world at large. And I think this is the first example of that. I think this discussion, when you think about what happened 4 years with Colin Kaepernick, there were a lot of divergent opinions. I would even go so far as to say that people's opinions back then are not what their opinions are right now. And I know that I've probably thought a lot differently about that situation than I do now. And that has basically led or come from a lot of personal growth. You mentioned conversations, Caleb and Joe. And I also feel like the one thing that needs to happen, at least from the standpoint of where the three of us sit, is that we need to be able to continue to listen. And we aren't able to 100% fully empathize because we can't put ourselves absolutely 100% positively in people's shoes of that nature. But I do think that that doesn't mean that we can't make a difference. We can't cause social change. We've talked about that on this podcast before. And again, we'll get to the baseball. I know that people want to listen to us talk more about baseball, but I do feel like it is important to, at least from our perspective, tell you who listen to this podcast that we certainly understand the reasons why sporting events weren't played yesterday. And we want to be part of the forward movement that leads to events like what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, not happening again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we all just want to be part of the solution. Again, I think that there's not, I don't sense that there's a ton of disagreement in what the end goal here is. Like, I don't think that anybody is, you know, standing against trying to diminish police brutality, and especially as with it being as kind of racially divided as it is. So I feel like I'm not a politician. I'm just like a person out here that normally talks sports, and so as someone who covers sports, I just love to see players using the social power that they have as they're standing in our American culture to be able to try to leverage that for positivity, for a better future for all of us. And it's very interesting to me over the course of just like seeing this evolve. And it seems like it's especially rapidly evolved since Colin Kaepernick has really kind of taken a stand doing his kneeling protest, that just how much weight these athletes carry. And so I think that it's just very important for us to kind of hear their message and Hopefully what they're doing will lead to positive changes for our society that will leave all of us in a better space going forward.
Yeah, I think, Joe, one of the things you kind of touched on that I've heard a lot recently is various people in the sports world who are like, hey, look, I'm not a politician. You know, I'm not a person who works in that space, but to care about this, you don't need to be like this. You know, it's one of those, like, this isn't a political issue. Like, we're dealing with people who matter. And specifically, you know, these faces of the sports that we love to watch are coming out and being like, hey, can you please care about us, you know, as human beings, that we are more than, you know, just the ball that we're playing with. I know one of the ones that kind of broke me down a little bit yesterday was Dominique Smith of the Mets.
Dom Smith, definitely.
Yeah, I think I sent you guys that in the group chat where he was just like, can you just care? Like, can you know? Right. And I think that's what the, you know, a lot of the times, some of the things that I've heard of the last 24 hours is, all right, what's the plan? But I think more than anything, these players, the plan was pay attention. And, you know, I mean, as much as we are very thankful to play a sport that makes us a lot of money, like, we are human beings. And, you know, if you don't understand that from just a general basic level, then there's going to be conflict. So I loved seeing the players come together and kind of stick up for things. I think the downside to the Braves is they were just out of the loop. Like Freddie was saying, is that, you know, there was 40 minutes between the doubleheader. They didn't have any TVs on. It was just, you know, completely, they were out of the loop per se, because they were, you know, they're looking to do their job. They were looking to face the Yankees, who are a tough opponent.
Freddie Freeman spoke about that. I'm going to play that sound right now.
We only had about 40 minutes between games. We had no TVs on. We didn't really have any idea what was going on between games. We were just getting ready for game two. But when we found out after the game and realized the stance players are taking, just not only in baseball but basketball and around the world, you just got to stand with them and support them.
I want to say one thing about this. I've seen some criticism. I don't know if I've actually seen any directed at the Braves or Braves players, but there was a soccer player that plays for LAFC, Mark Anthony Kay, put it out there on Twitter, like, bashing Orlando and Nashville for playing that game. I think that's unfair. Like, I just, like, mm-hmm. you know, I think that these guys were trying to go about their business, and they were not, like Freddie Freeman just said, they weren't connected to this movement that was taking place yesterday. And so I don't think that we need to judge their character based on the fact that they played the game yesterday. That's where I feel that those are the things I fear about this conversation, is making character judgments based on people who are in certain circumstances that affected their actions on that given day. And I think that mm-hmm. to make such a quick reaction like Mark Anthony Kay did, because I'll just say I disagree with what he said there as it related to the Orlando players. I just hope that some of that people can have some understanding as to how quickly these things can come up. And it's not necessarily an indictment on their character because they didn't know what was going on.
As awkwardly but dutifully as we can, we transition to the baseball at hand. And like I said before, we were waiting for some good Braves news on one of these podcasts. It seemed like every time we did a podcast, we had some unfortunate on-the-field news. But we got some good news yesterday, at least on the field. The Braves take two from the Yankees. They didn't play on Tuesday. They were supposed to play two seven-inning games, including the debut of Ian Anderson. And we'll start there, guys. The kid looked good. He shoved for six innings, five no-hit innings. The only blemish was a solo home run allowed to Luke Voit. He looked the part and gave the Braves the best start from anybody not named Max Fried, I would argue, since the injury to Mike Soroka.
I think he was the first one to go five innings since like August 3rd or something like that. Mark Bowman had the stat, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think it was Kyle Wright had gone five innings in early August, and that was the first time a Braves pitcher not named Max Fried had gone that long in a game. So I think for that reason, it was definitely kind of refreshing to see that, but also just refreshing to see a top prospect and a guy that's been touted by fans, people in the organization, et cetera, all have high hopes for this guy. And for him to come through in that situation, you know, I think it says a lot about kind of his mentality, his demeanor. And I think it says a lot about what he can provide for this team, you know, as it pushes for the playoffs and even goes into the playoffs.
It was just so refreshing to see someone look confident on that mound for the Braves. I think that's been the biggest issue that I've seen of whether it's, you know, I mean, more recently, whether it's Tuki Toussaint, whether it's Josh Tomlin and his last start, whether it's Robbie Erlin, who, you know, one of those, his first start, the stat line looked well, but I was never comfortable with him, you know, starting a game kind of deal. And it was just one of those, there is just something to looking the part, getting up there, and as, you know, as Snit said a million times yesterday, throwing strikes, you know, just, it's so refreshing to just see somebody throwing strikes, but looking confident and looking like the moment wasn't too big for him. It was, I mean, thank goodness. I hope this continues.
You're right. And, you know, the one thing that was asked of me in a couple of instances, whether it was on radio spots or the like, is that, you know, was seeing the Yankees something that would affect him adversely? And I almost felt like it was the exact opposite. I feel like he kind of cherished the moment and thrived in the moment. He's somebody who's from upstate New York. He grew up a Red Sox fan, so you certainly had the added motivation there of wanting to beat the New York Yankees. There were no fans in the stands, and it was something that he talked about as far as just the experience afterwards. He said that regardless of whether the fans were there or not, didn't faze him.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it helped me relax. I haven't gotten a chance to ask anyone what it's like with fans in the stands. That was what I was going to do after, but I think it definitely helped me relax and kind of realize that, you know, it's still the same game.
Thing I didn't also really get a sense of in advance, and I got more of as the game went on, I kind of thought that he was going to have to develop another pitch. I would still like to see some more variance, and again, this is being nitpicky stuff, more variance in speed between the changeup and the fastball, because I feel like once hitters start to sit on it, it can become a predictable pitch, especially if it's not down enough in the zone. I wouldn't mind still seeing something that goes off the curveball, whether it's a slurve or even a split finger fastball, something that is different than the high riser. But in terms of the live arm and the pure stuff, it's everything we were promised as far as the Braves go from the guy who was drafted number 3 overall.
Yeah, go ahead, Caleb.
No, I was just going to say, you were talking about, you know, where pitch placement. Wasn't it also so refreshing? When he was missing down. You know, it was like, he's not leaving stuff
out over the plate.
Yeah, that's just being sent into the stands, you know, kind of deal that we've seen from so many other guys who, when they start having those command issues, and he did a couple of times, it seemed like stuff was missing low when it was more Tyler Flowers having to do some work to block the plate rather than just, you know, giving those beautiful launch angles to the Yankees.
Yeah, no, that's funny you say that, because that's exactly what I was going to say. But I also just think it was, and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but it was just so refreshing to see him, a pitcher out there that is confident in his ability to throw strikes when he needs to. And so when you're confident in your ability to be able to do that, then you can kind of pitch in a different way. You know, like, you're not concerned about making sure, you know, you're grooving a strike on the first pitch and you can get ambushed that way. Or the vice versa, when you get down the count, you know, you become very predictable. He seemed like he was able to throw strikes when he needed to. He was able to kind of ride the line between being fine and being able to throw strikes and making sure that he was just getting outs, not putting free guys on base. So I think that, and you know, it's something that's always refreshing when we watch Max Fried pitch as well, who was pitched in game 2. It's great to see that from Braves pitchers. It's not asking a ton, you know. it would be nice if there were a couple more guys who could do that, but I think it just goes to show it's been so long for us since we've been able to kind of see somebody like that. And as it relates to Ian going forward, I will be interested to see how he is able to go out in his next start and try to build on this. I don't necessarily think we should be expecting him to go out and replicate this performance or have a better performance. But if he can at least just go out there and, you know, just go out there and be able to leave the game with a good feeling, like you gave the team a chance to win, I think that that's really what we want to see from Ian in the next 2, 3, 4 games, because those, having that consistency and establishing that, is really what's going to solidify him as a top major league starting pitcher.
So we sit 30 games in, 30 games to play. The Braves are 18-12. And just hearing that number out loud, it doesn't sound impressive, but when you think about everything that they've had to deal with adversity-wise, I think that makes it a lot more impressive. The trade deadline is next week, guys, and they will have either completed a deal or not between now and then. We have two pitchers now who are starters, who you, I guess you could say you feel confident about. What needs to happen between now and the beginning part of next week in your mind? Do you think they need to trade for a pitcher? Can they survive with getting Cole Hamels back? We hope, we think, we pray. Or is it something where a guy needs to be jettisoned and they have to get another starter? I know that one guy's already off the board in Taijuan Walker. Lance Lynn's name's been thrown around. Of course, Clevinger with Cleveland and a couple of others. But there's just not a lot out there, unfortunately.
I think you have to go get someone. You know, it's one of those, whether it is one of, whether you're going to get a number one or two from a team, which seems rather unlikely, as I said a few weeks ago, I think going to get that 3 or 4 on a team who's out of it is more likely, and that's still better than what you've got in your 3, 4, and 5. You know, like, it's just, we got to be honest. I think quite, you know, it's one of those, if Cole Hamels doesn't come back, That raises big concern for me. I think the Braves can get to the finish line because once we reach the playoffs, I think they'll be fine with just 3 arms. But I think they need that third. I don't think you can trust Josh Tomlin being your third. You know, and then you're turning to, you know, Robbie Erlin and whoever kind of deal. But it's once. In my mind, and maybe this is just rushing to too much judgment, it seems like you've locked up Max Fried. I think by the time we get 30 games in, we'll at least be comfortable with Ian Anderson, you know, whether he struggles at times or not. I think he's going to, just being a rookie kind of deal. But yeah, you've got to secure another arm, whether that's packaging, you know. I mean, I know everyone's told me that Ender Inciarte isn't tradable right now.
We gotta talk about Ender. But go ahead.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. Oh. You know, but it's whether you're packaging him, and I mean, honestly, in my mind, I've seen the struggles of Austin Riley long enough that to me, he's not a secured Braves, you know, third baseman kind of deal. So he's expendable to me. I don't know who on your prospect list is expendable. You got to make some kind of deal happen, because we're watching today, you know, Jeff Passan is going down naming the teams who are making trades, who are making deals happen to make their team better. I think the Braves have got to do it, and you know, we got one Ian Anderson out of this, but you got to get more.
I agree with you. I think that what the Braves have to look at right now is, so hold on, let me take it back. A couple of weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago or so, I was saying that the Braves were in a part of the season where they just need to tread water. You know, mm-hmm. like Acuna, mm-hmm. Albies were both injured. You were losing starting pitchers. You couldn't, you know, these guys were not performing at the major league level. You were all hands on deck. You had to do whatever you could to try to stay in contention. Now, huge credit goes to the Braves for doing more than that, for really elevating their status in the division. 18-12, gosh, they're like, what, 12 games away from securing at least a wild card spot? Like, this team should be looking at itself right now as a playoff team.
And 7-3 in their last 10, Joe. I mean, it's crazy. Nothing to sneeze at.
7-3 in the last 10, and those last 10 games, they haven't had pretty much anything going for them in terms of
that. That was when we were expecting them to tread water, of just split.
Go 5-5, even
granted,
4-6.
They were 5-5 going into last night's doubleheader. Yeah, that was
it's amazing how much a doubleheader sweep can really turn the tide. But anyway, I'm being really mealy mouthed and just saying that this team, I think, needs to go into this trade deadline. And when they're looking at acquiring a starting pitcher, you got to look at a guy who's going to be starting for you in the playoffs. That's really what they need. They need to solidify who is going to be in that playoff rotation, because this team should be looking now at not so much are we going to make the playoffs, but how can we strengthen our position to make sure we can make a run once we get there.
So, Ender Inciarte. He's
my guy.
Still on the roster. Christian Pache is not on the roster. I have significant issues with the way the Braves handled this situation. I understand all of the deficiencies involving the 40-man and not having another guy to bring up when Markakis went on the COVID list. We talked about it last week, though, guys. If you're going to bring Pache up, use him instead of having him as a late-game defensive replacement, have him make his debut in one game, and then send him back to the Gwinnett alternate site. I find it somewhat curious, and again, credit to Brian Snitker, Ender Inciarte basically had Pine sticking out of his behind for the entirety of that doubleheader, so it's not like he was a big factor in that once they got Acuna back, but I still wonder why he's taking up a lot of dead weight on this roster and we can't see the kid.
So I want to say one thing, and then I'll let Caleb have his thing, but I just want to get one thing across the table that will give us some more context for this conversation, which is that Ender Inciarte has enough service time where he cannot just, the Braves cannot option him and he has to go down. Like, he would have to, he would have to agree to that. And the most, so why would he do that? I think it's very unrealistic for him to expect him to do that. So the only way they can really, if they were to wanted to get rid of Ender Inciarte from the active roster, they would need to DFA him. And that would be an expensive move because of the contract that he's on and the fact that if he did get picked up, he could also would be eligible for like a free agency, and a team would sign him on a minimum deal, and the Braves would end up paying
the
big chunk of his contract, which I think is like $8.5 million, $9 million, something like that, for him to play for another team. So I personally think that this Pache conversation is more down to Matt Adams, even Echevarria or a Culberson, like one of those guys who would be a much cheaper cut in order to make room for Pache. But again, if you have Ender Inciarte already up, he and Christian Pache kind of are of a similar profile of player. So I don't know if the Braves, I don't know if that's something that tickles their fancy, having that kind of overlap.
Caleb.
So I'm going to be honest with you. Like, it's just, this whole situation has driven me nuts because, it's because we all attached like this hate on Inciarte, and Inciarte, like all of the issues that the Braves were having, everyone just kind of seemed to turn their focus towards him. And it was like, look, I kept saying it on here, he is struggling at the plate. Like, there's no denying that. He is not the only one struggling at the plate. You know, it was one of those, my bigger concerns were the fact that we were looking to have this competition between Riley and Camargo, and they've both been equally as bad as Inciarte, and we already knew Inciarte's limitations.
Well, if Johan Camargo sees the field after Ozzy Albies gets back, I will have a similar blow up. I will not have it.
Yeah, I mean I think he will in some kind of giving other guys a day of rest.
Yeah, a spell roll.
Yeah. Now, it's funny of what Joe's talking about when it comes to the contract stuff, I think is spot on, because we've gotten so clouded as towards Ender Inciarte, and, you know, he's limiting Pache's growth and all of this kind of stuff, when, I mean, my biggest concern is I'd never think the plastic should have been taking off Pache this year. I get the whole 40-man situation. I just want to know if there's not something that they could have done without taking the plastic off. Before we get there, though, we have a fan favorite who is on this roster right now, who isn't getting any playing time, who is taking up a roster spot.
His name is
Charlie Culberson.
Not wrong.
I love the man. The whole, like, you know, him and Dansby looking alike, and we had fun with that. And
yeah,
there were so many heroic moments for Culberson last year where he was clutch and it was great. And he's batting 143. He's not seeing many plate appearances. I'm sorry. He's got to go. Like, he's the one, not not like, Inciarte, not the expensive move, and just because I also believe that Inciarte has some trade value if you bunch him with someone else.
That's totally where I'm at, Caleb. And the thing is, like, I can't even recall, like, how many times Culberson's actually even played this year.
I couldn't tell you the last time I saw him on the field. Seriously.
He pinch ran in a situation where then Dansby hit a walk-off homer. So
he's had seven at-bats.
Wow.
Seven.
Yeah. So here's my thing. It's like, he's clearly not, he's just not providing you utility. Like, there's not an apparent reason for him to be on the roster.
What would you say you do here?
Yeah, right, exactly. And Christian Pache, on the other hand, like we already saw him throw a freaking pee from the outfield to nail a guy at home plate. Like, you can see how Christian Pache would be a much more utilized player as somebody who can come in, pinch run, play defense late in games, that kind of player. And I think here's the other thing with when it comes to Pache. Obviously, when you're talking about prospects and should they be on the major league team, and it benefits them to be in the minors because they get more at bats, they get to play every day, all that kind of thing. Totally agree with that. But this year, you don't have a minor league. So you're playing in a satellite camp. And I'm just not sure exactly, because we don't really know exactly how effective that satellite camp is. Is a player actually gaining better experience playing for the major league team, getting to know his teammates, getting ingratiated, you know, with just the major league game, or is he better off training with that satellite camp? Again, I don't really have a clear answer for that, but my kind of the way I'm leaning is that it's better for Pache long term for him to be kind of learning the ropes while helping the team at the major league level this year.
He's appeared in 8 games. 3 of those games, he did not register an at bat.
He hasn't even pitched yet this year.
And only 2 of those games he had multiple. Only 2 of the games that he had at bats, he had multiple at bats. So he hadn't started.
And the other thing, like I get that this would be a bit far fetched as to equate Inciarte to be an expensive pinch runner. But who do you want on your base paths? Charlie Culberson or Ender Inciarte?
Like, right. As
you know, it's just one of those. I think Echevarria.
Billy Hamilton's not available. So
yeah, exactly. You know, but it's one of those, like, Echevarria is above him when you get to, like, depth chart-wise.
Yes.
And I think once you get Albies back healthy, which I think is going to happen, I've been concerned.
Yeah, he's really murky.
Well, I've been really concerned with the way that Snitz talked about him, or the way he did yesterday specifically, where he kind of had this, like, yeah, whenever we get Albies back, I mean, you know, I mean, I think it's coming. Like, you know, it's one of those, like, yeah, I mean, it's concerning because it seems like it's one of those injuries that there is no quick, easy fix, and potentially surgery might be involved. I have no idea. Just, it seems the way that conversation has gone that might allude that way. But yeah, just, so he's not needed as a real depth piece. I don't think he would make the roster once we hit the playoffs. So what's he doing?
Well, this has been enlightening. This has been very enlightening.
So don't hate on Ender Inciarte so much.
We hope you enjoyed the Batter Up podcast. We'll be back for you after the trading deadline. We'll see whether or not the Braves make a move as they turn the page into September and get ready for the final stretch drive of the season. We are halfway home. Didn't think we'd make it this far, but the sprint is real. And be sure to keep checking back with us, not only on 929thegame.com, but the radio.com app, with the Batter Up podcast with Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson. I'm Will Pelagic saying so long, and thanks for listening to Batter Up, a 929 The Game and radio.com exclusive.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.